You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
Welcome. You are listening to and hopefully even watching the Financial Survival Network. I'm Carrie Lutz. Today is 2/23/2021. Well, market, is it starting to give way? Are we actually going to get another bear market? Or will the powers that be do everything in their power to stop it from happening? Our good friend Michael Pento is with us now, and his website, pentoport.com. Check them out there. Send us your thoughts. Are we at the beginning of the end for the bull market? And what comes next? We'd love to hear your opinion. Just send us an email to kl@carrielutz.com and we'll share it with Michael. Michael, welcome back. So a lot has taken place since we last spoke. What's your take on where we're at now?
Well, I think, Carrie, we're finally coming to the end of this grand experiment. You know, I guess you could go back to Alan Greenspan in 87. We had that 23% crash in one day. Can't happen today. We have circuit breakers, but you could still go down 7%. As a matter of fact, the morning of this recording, the NASDAQ was down almost 4%, in 15 minutes. So you can go down 7% in circuit breakers, but we're coming to the end of the experiment here, because ever since Alan Greenspan decided you can monetize and print away and inflate away a problem, we've been doing that off and on. We did it in the NASDAQ bubble. We did it in the housing bubble. You know, I don't want to go through all of it. You got your audience though.
Yeah.
It's easy to ameliorate a deflationary collapse of the economy and asset prices. It's easy. We've done it many, many times. I just said it. We're coming to the end of this experiment because what you need to keep asset bubbles in place is very, very low interest rates, ultra low interest rates. And you kind of need three things to have ultra low interest rates. And when I say ultra low, I mean historically low, $15 trillion around the world of negative yielding sovereign debt. I think you would agree. It's pretty low. So, I mean, the fact that you get paid to borrow money, it was a prima facie case. You being an ex-attorney will understand the language. Are bonds in a bubble? Guilty. Okay. So there's three things. You need growth to be subdued. You need inflation to be quiescent. And you need a central bank that's buying heavily on the long end of the yield curve. We had all three things off and on, mostly on than off, since 2000. Okay. The Fed has been leaning on long-term bonds, buying the heck out of them. We're now buying $120 billion of mortgage-backed securities and treasuries a month, as you are aware, I'm sure. Should be aware. Your audience should be aware. And up until now, you know, growth has been a problem. And we've had quiescence, relative quiescence. I'll say relative in CPI, consumer price inflation, the way the Fed reports it. We've had intractable inflation in asset prices. So we're coming to the end of this experiment, Carrie, because all those conditions are going away between now and April, May time. So the second derivative of growth is going to be surging year over year. Inflation is going to be surging above the Fed's asinine 2% target. And I believe if you have any success at all with the vaccines, and clearly the trend for hospitalizations and deaths is going down, thank God. And it might be because the weather's getting warmer. Not getting warmer here in the Northeast. And maybe it wasn't getting warmer in Texas, but you know, the spring comes, people get vaccinated, you're going to get some relative reopening of the economy, which means you're going to have the unemployment rate drop. Non-farm payroll reports will be exuberant because you're going to hire back a good portion of the leisure and hospitality sector. So you're going to have growth accelerating, you're going to have inflation accelerating, and you're going to at least put in the minds of investors that Powell is going to have to eventually attenuate, dial back his quantitative easing program. Now, let's see what happens, Carrie, when those three conditions take place and interest rates start to spike out of control. And here's the ultimate question for you. I'm asking myself this question too, and I think I have a legitimate answer to it. Can a Federal Reserve or any central banker placate or mollify a bond market that is experiencing plunging prices and soaring bond yields by promising to create more inflation? I think the answer is no. I don't think if it's a genuine revolt, you're going to get that. And you're getting it right now. I mean, we were at below 0.5% on the 10-year. Then we went to 1.37% on the 10-year note in a very, very short period of time. That's just beginning. I think you're going to go all the way to 2% in the next few months. Let's see how the market reacts to that. It's going to be negative. You can see what's already happening in the high flying beta stocks. I sold most of mine about a week ago. Still hold a few, and I might be whittling them down in the next few days. And let's see if Mr. Powell can come up in a panic and say, "Oh, don't worry about it. We'll increase QE from $120 billion to $150 billion a month." Well, Kerry, the problem is inflation. So if the problem is inflation, you can't placate the bond market by promising more inflation. This is what's happening right now. And this is what I'm myopically focused on.
Yeah, and this is what we call the cure is the disease. Right?
Well said.
It really is.
You just summarized my whole speech in about one sentence. That's why you're the professional. So I'm just a money man.
Yeah, that's why you get the big bucks here. I call it. But look, you know, you can't monetize your way out, because then the currency becomes worthless. And we've got, by some accounts, $7 trillion worth of monetization to do in the next 24 months. How is that going to help things?
Well, the Fed is buying $120 billion. So that's $1.44 trillion of monetization. So in the next 2 years, you're talking about almost $3 trillion in monetization. But we had, under Donald Trump's last year, we spent $4 trillion in fiscal stimulus. Mr. Biden has promised $1.9 trillion, right out of the gate. And then, Kerry, don't you know, right on the heels of that is going to be a massive infrastructure package, what everybody wants,
Yes.
not necessarily me, but everybody in D.C., both Republican and Democrat, seem to want. So you might be looking at, $4 trillion promised before the first 4 or 5 months of the presidency goes over. President Biden's tenure has begun. 4 months, you might get, close to $4 trillion. It's amazing. So who's going to absorb all that supply? And you remember 2013, the taper tantrum, where you see bond yields on the 10-year doubled in just a very short period of time. Well, we have a much worse condition now. Let's just look at asset prices. Record bubble. We're about 194% of GDP, total market cap of equities, as of this recording. Kerry, the average of that is below 0.7%.
Right.
So there's a massive bubble here. You look at price to sales, median PE, a massive bubble in the stock market. 2013, we didn't have that kind of bubble. But the debt of the nation has surged. So back in 2013, the total debt to GDP was 100%. Now we're at almost 130% debt to GDP. If you look at total non-financial business debt, 2013 was 42% of GDP. Today's 83% of GDP. What I'm saying is the next time, and whenever it comes, and it has to come either by Powell's volition or because he's forced to do it because the bond market's in full revolt, he's going to have to taper. Well, the next time Mr. Powell papers, you're going to have the entire fixed income division of Wall Street trying to front run the sales that are coming because, after taper comes rising interest rates. And you have to understand, what does the bond market look like in the context of inflation accelerating, growth accelerating, and a taper?
That's it.
That, to me, is why the market is starting to fracture and crack here. I don't think it's time to panic yet because I have a 20-point model called the inflation, deflation, and economic cycle model. I look at break-even spreads, LIBOR spreads, high-yield spreads. There's 20 components to the model. Right now, it's just flashing amber. It's not flashing red, so I'm not ready to panic yet. But that could change at any day. And when it does, I will make the changes because when the junk bond market implodes, Kerry, if you look at leverage loans, BBB debt, and which is one notch above junk, you're looking at almost $6 trillion in debt. I mean, Kerry, if a couple of, what was GameStop before it blew up? A couple of $100 billion? Was it $1 billion? Yeah. I don't know what it was. It was almost nothing.
20, 30 billion. It was a rounding error.
I don't think it was even 20, 30 billion. No, the market cap of GameStop.
Maybe it was 10, 500 a share, and
Oh, okay. I'm talking about before GameStop blew up. it was maybe $2 billion.
Oh, it was nothing. It was a pittance.
Yeah. So of course, according to Thomas Peterffy, CEO of Interactive Brokers, there was almost a domino effect. I have to laugh because the construct is so asinine that we have wrought upon us by central banks and the government. GameStop, which is just like a tsetse fly on a dinosaur, on a brontosaurus, almost brought down the entire financial system, not according to someone who's trying to use hyperbole, according to Thomas Peterffy. He was worried about it. He was worried about hedge funds and the shadow banks and brokerage firms going bankrupt because of GameStop. And maybe, I think, maybe also AMC.
I got a question for you, though, because you know the back office. You actually know the way that the business works of stock brokerage, right? Of the back end of the business. And it seems to me that that what happened there threatened the viability of all these different entities, particularly brokers. And that's why they had a mad dash to raise capital. And of course, their big uncle there, Ken, he started writing checks feverishly. And, you know, a hedge fund doesn't just give out several billion dollars because they're feeling generous and Santa Claus is coming to town, right? So for him to do that, to me and the other HF, I call them high frequency fraud outfits, HFF, you know, for them to actually start writing checks, this was existential.
Yeah. And so I hope you understand. I'm a big believer in what Thomas Peterffy says. I like the man and I think he's extremely honest. I mean, he was warning us how fragile the system is built. You know, and the Bible says, build your house on rocks. You know, build your house on rocks and sand. It's gonna wash away. I think that's terrible, right? I mean, you should have a strong foundation. Yeah. What foundation, Kerry? What is the foundation? If a $2 billion GameStop and American movie theater company can bring down the entire market, what's going to happen when the $6 trillion I just mentioned blows up? Because it's going to happen. And Kerry, if the NASDAQ can drop 4%, 3-4% in 15 minutes for no reason, when Jerome Powell is on TV testifying before Congress that he promises to print $120 billion a month every month, each and every month till the end of the year, at least that amount for at least that long. Kerry, what happens when he pulls the plug on that liquidity?
That's really such a great question. And I wish I could give you, I can give you an answer, but I won't because it's just not necessary. That's kind of a rhetorical question there, Michael, let's face it. It ain't going to be pretty. And that's why I've been telling people for 11 years, even though many of them thought I was an idiot. Actually, I've been going back to 1999 when I read Harry Brown's book and all of these other guys who said the sky was falling. I thought the sky had fallen in 08 and 09. They figured it out. They kept it going for another 12, 13 years. But here we are, 12, 13 years later, there's been no solutions. The problem has just gotten worse and worse. And the irresponsibility of our so-called leaders has just escalated. And they bear no resemblance to the people we had 20, 30 years ago, who I thought were utterly incompetent then.
Don't just survive, thrive. The Financial Survival Network.
Fury Gold Mines is a Canada-focused exploration and development company committed to aggressively growing its scalable high-grade gold assets with major drill campaigns planned across its 3.5 million ounce portfolio. Fury is led by a management team of proven explorers and developers with a track record of success in advancing and financing project development. Fury Gold Mines is well positioned to create value for investors with low-risk development growth and the potential for a new major discovery. Fury Gold Mines trades on the TSX and NYSE American under the ticker FURY. To learn more, go to furygoldmines.com. That's furygoldmines.com.
This is the Financial Survival Network, the information you need to thrive now more than ever.
Kerry, you're no idiot, obviously. I mean, look at that size of the brain on your head. Gee, I mean, the alpha waves are going. People call me an idiot, too, because, Mr. Pinto's been bearish for 10 years. Well, you know, First of all, I run an actively managed portfolio. So if I was bearish and short the market for 10 years, I could assure you my business would be out of business instead of growing rapidly. So let's just take care of it.
Yeah.
You and I were bearish on one thing. I believe you were bearish on one thing because I'm not going to speak for you, but let me speak for myself. I was on TV twice a week from 2007, 2008, worrying about the collapse in the house coming. And after it happened, I actually went bullish in January of 2009 on the Kudlow program. I was excoriated during that time. But here's the thing, you could say that I'm a perma bear, you're a perma bear. Here's what I was permanently bearish on, that you cannot ameliorate an over indebted economy that's addicted to asset bubbles and low interest rates by exponentially increasing all those factors. That is what I was bearish on. And I think that's what you were bearish on. Now, I said that the growth in GDP would be slower than trend, and I was correct. I said that the market in various times would collapse in 2008, collapse in 2018, collapse in 2020, going to collapse again. Again, this is because the foundation is built on sand. That is the reason why. And the bearishness that we had, again, just to be clear, is that we were not building a sustainable and viable economy. That is it. That doesn't mean you and I were always massively long gold and short stocks. I'm speaking for myself. So that's
same here. Same here. After 2013, I realized that they pulled off the unthinkable. They were reflating. And that other asset classes clearly were going to outperform the metals. But that didn't mean that, I take issue with you on one thing, Michael. You said the foundation's built on sand. I think they found the biggest sinkhole they could find in Tampa, Florida, and said, perfect, build it here. Yeah. And because it's worse than sand. It's worth, there's no bottom to this stupidity. We all know like fractional banking, fractional reserve banking, all these things that you and I have railed against for ages. This is the foundation of the financial system, and it's got nowhere to go. And what's really great is the rest of the world has emulated us, including the emerging economies. China might have more gold than any other country in the world. I don't dispute that for a second, but what good does it do them? Because they're still part of the system and they can't just opt out because that would destroy the system. And they can't just build a new system until the old system collapses. So for right now, their gold holdings are kind of like the man said, a barbarous relic until they aren't anymore, of course.
Well, let me just comment on what you just said. One of the reasons why, I love gold and consider myself a gold bug, but I toggle the weighting between 0 and 25% in the portfolio because people have been calling for a U.S. dollar to collapse for decades now. Sometimes the dollar is up and sometimes the dollar is down, and when growth and inflation are accelerating here in the United States, you tend to see the dollar fall. And when the opposite is true, when there's a liquidity crisis, the dollar tends to increase in value. But the reason why the dollar is not headed into the toilet anytime soon against the euro, the yen, the pound, is because every other country is doing the same damn thing that we're doing. Yeah. So how can a fiat, if you hate fiat and you say to yourself, I really hate fiat and I hate dollars, which I do, let me run into the sanctuary of the yen. What is that? You will have to buy hard assets. You should always have 5% physical gold. And then I toggle the weighting of gold in my portfolio between 0 and 20, 25%. Right now we're almost zero in the portfolio. You have to try to be smart about these things. But you said something else that reminded me, I wanted to talk to you about something else. I hear these people talking about that the market's not, overvalued. This is the biggest bubble in history. And they say it's not overvalued. So they say that, well, it's not overvalued, so it's not going to crash that much. Well, let's just say this. In 2007, precipice of the Great Recession, the total market cap of equities as compared to GDP was around 100%, even though it was 94 percentage points lower than it is today. The S&P 500 still fell by 50%. But you don't have a housing bubble today, just a housing bubble today. You've got a bond bubble, stock bubble, and housing bubble. Here's the truth. In the peak home price to income ratio in 2005 was about 4.6 4.63, 4.65. Today it's 4.4. Jerry, we've managed to reinflate the housing bubble and throw a bond bubble and a massive unprecedented stock bubble on top of that. And if you don't think that the stock market can go down 50% over the next few years, think about this. Again, all of the market crashes occurred where there was room for the Fed to do something. Okay, in 2008, Fed funds rate was 5.25%, took it down to zero. 2000, it was over 6%, took it down to zero. If we have an inflationary insolvency implosion of the bond market, Kerry, and the stock market goes down, what are they going to take interest rates to, Kerry? -5? I mean, if the deposit rate at a bank was -5%, how many people would, you'd have a run on the bank. That's why I think they're going to launch a public cryptocurrency. So they ban private cryptocurrencies and I think India is doing that right. They're looking to do that right now.
Yeah, you're right.
We do not want Bitcoin. We are not going to let you usurp the power we have over our currency. Not going to happen. Not going to happen without a fight.
I tell people that and they think I'm an idiot, honestly. What is the one power that the government has above all others? And that is the sovereign power of printing money, right? I mean, that's just it.
Why in the world? This is what I'm empathetic with cryptocurrencies. I understand the progenitor of the idea. You don't trust fiats. Well, great. Well, the whole thing about cryptocurrencies is it's decentralized. Okay, it's decentralized and anonymous and immutable. Then why do you why are you wanting it to be traded on Wall Street? Why do you want it to be subject to AML and KYC laws? Well, the government comes in and says, you know what? We want to impose a negative interest rate on the banks. We have to ban all cash. We have to then have a cryptocurrency that's issued by the Fed, called a Fed coin, okay, or something like that. And we're banning private. We don't reckon to relinquish our ability to inflate the economy because there's 21 million units of Bitcoin available, unless it works, whatever. So they're going to say, why are we going to relinquish the power to control the purchasing power of the dollar and be able to inflate our way out of, try to inflate our way out of debt bubbles? Because why? They'll say, listen, cryptocurrencies, you are illegal. Anyone caught commercing in cryptocurrency goes to jail or is subject to fine. You can't go to an exchange to buy it.
I know.
If Coinbase is wiped off the map, you'll have no liquidity. So, I mean, you can't obliterate cryptocurrencies, totally, Bitcoin, but you can make sure they're not trading at $50,000 a unit. That's easy to do if you're the government. That's what I'm afraid of.
Pose this to you. What if tomorrow you could get 5 years in jail for possession with intent to distribute Bitcoin, right?
Yeah. So what would happen to the price? So all of Wall Street would have to vomit out all of these ETFs that they're proposing, MicroStrategies, all these funds that are, Tesla would have to dump all of its Bitcoins that it's holding instead of cash. It's illegal. So, what would the price be if it was illegal to hold or do or conduct commerce in Bitcoin? And by the way, when you go to download a Bitcoin, you have to have a wallet. You have to have a digital wallet. Well, there's platforms you have to go to, public platforms where everybody can see what you're doing. So it's going to be, it would be relegated to the dark web and for illicit transactions. And I don't know what the value is, maybe a few $100 a unit or whatever. I don't know what that is, but it doesn't even have any utility. I don't agree with Janet Yellen on anything, but when she says, and I know that it's like, I think Bitcoin can conduct 5 transactions a second. I mean, what kind of currency would it ever make? It takes a tremendous amount of energy to conduct a transaction. If you can only conduct 5 transactions a second, it could never be a currency. So if it's not a currency, it's not unique because anybody in the world can create a cryptocurrency pretty much. And
I just created one. I don't know if you heard about it. It's called Ponzi Coin. If you get in early, you can really make a fortune. But if you're the last one in, I wouldn't want to be in your position.
So it has no utility. It can't be a currency. Anybody can create a blockchain and have a cryptocurrency. So if it serves the same purpose as Bitcoin, well, doesn't that, you know, kind of diminish the value of everyone else that's in existence? And then government can ban it very easily.
I'll give you one better. In order to keep the blockchain, to maintain it, you've got to have these nodes. And Bitcoin only has 10,000 of them in the world, and a large chunk of them are in China. But if it's made illegal, they know exactly where the nodes are. They can either remotely neutralize the nodes, they've got the technology, the hacking technology, or they just send somebody to your door who then rips out your server. And you do that enough, and then if you block all the other remaining nodes just for a short period of time, for a day or two, that's kind of the end of your cryptocurrency. Because if you lose price discovery on a cryptocurrency for several hours, will damage its credibility a day. But imagine 72 hours, Michael, where you can't find out what your Bitcoin's worth. Well, there's so many ways to get at it.
That is a great example of what could happen. Or you could just banish all exchanges. It's illegal. They're illegal. And then what do you do? How do you know what your price is? Where's the liquidity? Where's the transparency? So listen, I'm not here to bash cryptocurrency. I absolutely, you know, love the people behind it. You know, I'm very smart people. They're trying to get away from fiat, but it is a manifestation. Let's be honest. It is a paragon manifestation of the everything bubble. And when this bubble crashes, when the real estate bubble, bond bubble, and equity bubble crashes, I can virtually guarantee you. I can't guarantee anything.
Life, death, and taxes. You can pretty much guarantee.
I'm very confident that cryptocurrencies will crash right alongside, because it's just a manifestation of the massive liquidity bubble engendered by your friend Jerome Powell. My good friend
Jerry Powell. And I think we'll leave it at that. But really, if you take this stuff seriously, you got to go over to pentoport.com, start looking at a defensive portfolio that can yield you profits, but hopefully avoid the losses that are built in, baked in the cake, Michael, pretty much baked in the cake, right?
I will say the best case scenario is that going out 10 years, the market is probably only down a few percentage points. That would be a really good case scenario. When valuations are this stretched, you're going to have almost no return, maybe a negative return over the next decade. But that wouldn't be so bad. That's bad enough, but it wouldn't be so terrible, except that in the interim, you're, you know, very likely to have an absolute meltdown of prices and then make your way back up. Now, who in the world who's approaching retirement wants to have, for the fourth time in the last 20 years, you know, most of their life savings wiped out? Who wants to do that? You have to be a little smarter. It's difficult to do. I mean, I could, you know, 95% of Wall Street are just salespeople. Give me your money. I'll plug it into some model, you know, based upon your, you know, modern portfolio theory, and depending on your age, and then, you know, I'll go on to the next guy. But you have to have yourself in an actively managed portfolio that at least tries to, doesn't guarantee anything, but tries to intelligently map and model the economy based on the second derivative of growth and inflation.
The real economy. Hey, we've known you for many, many years, Michael. It's great to have you back on the show. Any questions for Michael, just send an email to kl@kerrylutz.com. Make sure you go to our site, Financial Survival Network. Sign up for a free newsletter. Michael, we will talk to you again real soon. Be well.
Thank you so much for having me back on.
Thanks for listening to Kerry Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.